on the outside.
In either case, the fluid that constantly nourishes the eye does not drain out, so pressure in the eye increases, damaging the optic nerve, which transmits images to the brain. Weinreb said his study reinforced the idea that patients do not need to see an eye specialist in order to recognize the problem developing.
Primary care providers could have a major role in detecting, recognizing, and referring patients who are at highest risk for developing glaucoma.
Dr. Weinreb says family doctors can ask about a patient's family history of glaucoma. They can also check their patient's optic nerve with a small device with a light on the end. If the optic nerve doesn't look normal, the doctor can refer the patient to an eye specialist. Jeffrey Miller says although treatments are available, the best way to prevent glaucoma is with a yearly eye exam.
Get your eyes checked just as early as you can and as thoroughly as you can.
Glaucoma can't be prevented, but when caught early, it can be treated, and further damage to the optic nerve can be avoided or delayed. Dr. Weinreb's study is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
To learn more about this story, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
Let us know your thoughts or questions by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now, we got right now, so get up right now, 'cause all we got is right now.
There have been almost 2 million cases of the mosquito-borne illness, chikungunya, throughout parts of Asia since 2005.
Researchers are testing an experimental vaccine to prevent outbreaks, which also occur in Africa and the Americas.
As VOA's Jessica Berman tells us, researchers used a virus-like particle rather than an inert or dead virus to develop the vaccine.
The virus is transmitted through infected female mosquitoes that bite during the day. The mosquitoes also transmit other viral diseases, including dengue fever. In fact, the symptoms of chikungunya, including fever, rash, headache, and severe joint pain, are often mistaken for dengue, another tropical illness that causes severe aches and pains and a high fever. Working to develop a vaccine against chikungunya, which the WHO says has reached epidemic proportions, researchers used a virus-like particle rather than the killed or weakened virus used in traditional vaccines. The experimental drug contained outer surface proteins taken from a West African strain of chikungunya without the genetic material that causes infection. It stimulated a robust antibody response in the majority of the 25 healthy young American volunteers in the initial trial. The candidate vaccine was reportedly well tolerated. Antibody response was seen even at the lowest doses. More clinical trials and regulatory approval are needed before the vaccine becomes available. According to the WHO, more than 1.9 million cases of chikungunya were reported in India, Thailand, Indonesia, and Burma over the past decade. There have also been outbreaks in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Gabon, in the island countries of the Indian Ocean and the Caribbean. A number of cases have been reported recently in France, Italy, and the U.S. Ann Powers with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says it's hard to estimate how many people have been infected.
Because there simply isn't any treatment available. So they learn from their friends, their neighbors, their family that, oh, I've got chikungunya. It's going to be a self-limiting disease. I'll feel bad for a while, but then I'll recover.
But even after they've recovered from the initial infection, people will sometimes feel bad for months and even years with severely aching joints. Looking ahead to the possible release of an approved vaccine, Power says in the United States it might be given to overseas travelers.
In contrast, in some places like India, where they have chikungunya circulating continuously, it might be something that they would want to incorporate into their routine vaccine regimen.
Until then, Power says the best protection continues to be avoiding mosquito bites by covering up and using an insect repellent. An article on human trials of an experimental chikungunya vaccine is published in the journal The Lancet. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
So what do you think? Let us know by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show.
Travel to deep space presents several challenges, including how to store the fuel needed just to get there.
One of the solutions could be the electrical engine powered by electricity from solar panels.
As VOA's George Putich tells us now, such engines are already in use aboard many satellites.
Physicists consider gravity a weak force. After all, we overcome its pull each morning when we get out of bed. However, launching a satellite requires more effort, a larger rocket, and a lot of chemical fuel, which is quickly burned as it powers upward. Once the payload reaches about 160 kilometers above the Earth, the effect of gravity has weakened enough for it to stay in orbit. A one-way mission into deep space would require even more fuel, says NASA Senior Technologist for Space Propulsion, Michael Patterson.
For any mission application, you know, the particularly in deep space, the energy required to do the mission is huge, and so the propellant fraction is typically quite large.
Patterson says in the 1950s, the space agency started experimenting with so-called electric propulsion, or EP, a jet of electrically charged particles that does not require too much power. Once in space, the EP craft would keep gradually accelerating toward its destination, moving faster and faster the longer it travels. After 4 years, for example, it could be traveling at 10 kilometers a second. This makes it ideal for long-range missions. But while NASA was testing EP for deep space voyaging, engineers found another application for ion jets closer to our home planet. The gravity of the Sun, Moon, and Earth constantly pull on geosynchronous commercial satellites, which stay in the same position relative to Earth. Electric propulsion proved to be very useful for making sure that they stay in their required position. Patterson says out of approximately 250 geosynchronous satellites in orbit today, about 43% have some form of EP on board. Applications for deep space missions had to wait for another decade.
It wasn't until the 1990s where electric propulsion actually started being used by NASA for NASA missions, and that was with the advent of the ion thruster technology that was flown on the Deep Space One mission.
Scientists continue to experiment with other forms of propulsion that require even less energy. While NASA is developing the next generation ion propulsion system called NEXT, others are experimenting with more radical concepts, such as Q thruster, that uses radio frequency microwaves instead of charged particle jets. Critics call it the impossible engine, saying that the concept violates the basic principles of physics, while proponents say they have proof that it has actually generated thrust. Patterson points out that EP is not appropriate for crewed missions in Earth's orbital environment or for travel to the moon because it would take too long.
Crossover point is on the in the kind of this Mars destination or beyond. Meaning, if you have enough power on board, it starts to possibly make sense to use electropropulsion for a crewed mission.
But he says for now, it would be reasonable to use EP for big unmanned vehicles taking cargo to Mars orbit to support human infrastructure on the ground. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
To see video of this story, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And post your comments or questions at our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show.
Young Americans, especially those with Asian roots, have turned to social media and the internet to discuss the immigrant experience of their parents.
The Tumblr blog Rad Brown Dads, which is another way of calling fathers of color cool, encourages people to tell the stories of their immigrant dads and submit photos of them sporting the highest fashions of the past, from plaid suits to mullets and mustaches.
The creator of the blog, Ahmed Ali Akbar, told VOA's Halima Shah that looking through old photos of his own dad encouraged him to start a Tumblr blog featuring vintage photos of men of color, which he believes has close to 20,000 hits.
I was looking at these pictures of my dad and just appreciating the sort of stylish and self-possessed man he was in that era when, you know, he left everything from Pakistan to come to America. I started with posting those photos of my family, and then submissions just started rolling in. Like, I was really overwhelmed by the number of submissions I got.
So what exactly does it mean to be rad?
When I think of it, I think of it as sort of like in the 70s and 80s. It was a word used to describe cool. So it sort of has that retro appeal of it, of like somebody who's cool or different or goes by their own beat. But it also is short for radical. And there's a lot of ways to understand the word radical, but a lot of times people think of it as political radicals. And that means somebody who's very engaged in issues of you know, progressive issues or issues of difference. In the 70s and 60s in South Asia and the Arab world, there was a lot of debates about, you know, what it meant to be a person of color, a brown person, an Asian person, an Indian person, a Pakistani person, whatever. For us kids in America, a lot of us inherited those thoughts. So it's a lot of things. It's got political implications. It's got fashion implications.
Yeah, and speaking of fashion, the blog features a lot of vintage photography and just really stylish imagery. Why do you choose to focus on vintage photography?
Well, one is a personal preference. I just love the style of the 70s. Again, going back to that original story about why I started the blog looking back at photos of my father's, you know, when you become a parent, like, style becomes less of a concern, which is fine. You know, they have other priorities. But you look back at these photos and you realize, no, actually, they were all very, very stylish. And there was a look that has been lost in the immigration story. They're wearing a very sort of distinct look.
And one of the things you say on the blog is that it was conceived of as a resistance to desexualized stereotypes of Muslim and South Asian men as sexist, dweeby, and abusive. You definitely touched on the topic of parenthood, but do you think that you're starting a conversation about masculinity among men of color?
That's an interesting point. That conversation you're quoting came from a conversation with one of my friends and somebody who reads the blog. Obviously, in America, in this time period, there's a lot more open discussion on the internet about feminism, about women, about privilege that men have over women in society. And one of the issues for men of color is, how do we fit into that conversation? The issue of desexualization is something that I hear a lot of my contemporaries complain about, that American culture valorizes a certain beauty ideal that they don't embody. And I think the blog is just is a positive counteract to that, of saying, look, you know, men of color can be beautiful too on their own terms without being defined by other people.
And Halima Shah joins us in the studio. Halima, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, this guy started this blog kind of as a tribute to his father. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So he actually told me that he began the blog as kind of a way to examine the relationship that he's had with his dad. One of the things Ahmed mentioned was that he considers himself a mama's boy. And after his mom passed, he really wanted to examine his relationship with his father a little bit more closely. At the time, he was also writing an essay that examined how his parents got married, which was kind of a marriage under duress. Mm-hmm. His parents were people from two very different classes and social circles. Yeah, and they chose to get married anyway. Mm-hmm. So Ahmed really started this blog looking through old photos of his dad, and then he began to post them on the Tumblr blog.
I would say my question will come out of your answer. Why a blog on dad and why not moms? Did you talk to him about this?
We did, and Ahmed kind of mentioned that he wanted to create a space to talk about immigrant fathers, especially because they've often been portrayed in this kind of sexist light historically, and he wanted to kind of shine a different light on them. Additionally, the fact that his mother had passed, this was really his way to get closer to his dad. And actually, there is a Rad Brown Moms, but that was actually started by another online acquaintance of him following the launch
of... South Asian?
Also South Asian, following the launch of Rad Brown Dads.
And this is not all serious. I mean, he does take some humorous jabs at his dad in this blog, right?
He definitely does. And really, the entire blog has a really lighthearted feel to it, even though the topic is fairly serious by examining immigrant experience, which oftentimes... has a lot of struggles. What he does is that he makes a lot of quirky comments and very like lighthearted comments beneath all of the images that he posts. And he says that, you know, there's a point in everyone's life where we realize that our parents aren't these authoritative figures all the time, and we can start to joke around with them and see them in a more lighthearted sense.
Well, thank you very much, Halima, for joining us. What do you think? Do you have a Rad Brown Dad? Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show.
To see the Rad Brown Dads blog, you can log on to www.radbrowndads.tumblr.com. Thanks for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Now.
For more on the stories you heard, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com.
You can also post your thoughts or ask a question on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show.
Patrice Martin.